Welcome to Chevrons Locked, a Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
I'm Melanie.
And I'm Andrea.
Andrea is going to guest with us again tonight for the third time. We're super pumped to have her.
Woo woo!
Yay!
Yay!
We're talking about season one, episode 20, There But For the Grace of God, which was written by, well, the story was by David Kemper, and this is the only ep that he contributed on. Although he went on to become a Farscape regular writer. And the teleplay was by Robert C. Cooper, who did a lot of Stargate episodes. Huh? It's directed by David Wary Smith, who did quite a few episodes, but this was his first. It originally aired the 20th of February, 1998. It features the return of Elizabeth Hoffman as Catherine Langford. So I think this is the last we'll see of her until 1969.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which is her final episode. She's really the only person that returns. We get Harriman again, but he's been in several episodes up to this point. So before we really jump in, spoiler warning as usual, we will be talking about whatever strikes our fancy throughout the whole series, and also warning for explicit content as usual.
I am very delighted that David Kemper went on to be a badass Farscape guy, but this episode was so good, I wish he had hung around and contributed more to the Stargate universe.
Yeah, I wonder, so I did some research on the title because it's a long title.
Yeah.
It sounds nice, but you guys, it's really a mouthful to say when you're talking about a TV episode. And so I Googled it, and it's a phrase that's attributed to John Bradford, who was a Protestant chaplain during King Edward VI's reign. So King Edward was a Protestant king, but when he died, eventually his daughter Mary Tudor took over, and she brought Catholicism back and killed and John Bradford was executed. He was burned at the stake.
Yeesh.
But yes. So it's unclear if he for sure said this. So he said, supposedly, there but for the grace of God goes John Bradford. And he used it to talk about, basically, when he talked about sinners or other people, there but for the grace of God goes I, go I. Like, if it weren't for the grace of God, he himself could easily be in as dire of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that acknowledging that any of us or yourself could be in bad situation except for like luck or the grace of God or whatever, you can substitute in other things as well.
That's actually really kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
It also, they sort of resembles a phrase in 1 Corinthians by, I'm pretty sure it must be Paul, who says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am.
Yeah, that would be Paul.
Yeah, and so he's talking about how he's the least of the apostles and he persecuted the church. So basically he's saying, if it weren't for the grace of God, I wouldn't be an apostle. And so it's also, though, been attributed to by, I guess you would say, Arthur Conan Doyle in the Sherlock Holmes story, The Boscombe Valley Mystery. The character Sherlock says, why does fate play such tricks with poor, helpless worms? I never hear of such a case as this that I do not think of Baxter's words and say, there, but for the grace of God, goes Sherlock Holmes. So Baxter, in that case, he's referring to Richard Baxter, who was also a pastor. So there you go.
I definitely feel like the Bradford context definitely applies to the episode.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, well, I think that's always supposed to be the context.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it does apply to this episode. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Who is kicking us off? I already forgot.
You.
Oh, that's right! Me! Okay.
Am I doing the synopsis or no? Are we skipping the synopsis?
Yeah. Synopsis, right? Sorry.
Guys, it's like my like, little time to talk right now, okay? Like...
Well, because normally Chels goes, and Melanie, what do you have for us as a synopsis?
I usually do that.
Because she normally does the beginning part of the episode.
But she had stuff to say about the Fallout Boy title. It's fine.
The Fallout Boy title. That's great.
So it is. It's the same length.
It also doesn't abbreviate well either. Like, if you think you're saving yourself time by doing, like, TBFTGOG. No, it is not. It doesn't, like, you gotta think about it.
Well, and then you type that, and I was like, the hell is that?
Well, because sometimes in, like, fics, you'll see it tagged, like, post, and then all the letters, and you're like,
no.
Yeah.
You never seen that?
That definitely happens in fandoms, and usually it makes it easier to recognize. Yeah. Like, if I see COTG, it likes Children of the Gods, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But for this, it's like, that doesn't help.
No. Neither are good.
I've seen people abbreviate Window of Opportunity, but they do like two capital O's. So like I was very confused why we were saying woo over and over again.
Woo! Or like post woo is some sort of new fandom, like post coital situation. It's post woo.
Oh my gosh, this sounds like a Sims reference.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. Yes,
it is. All right, Mel, do you have a synopsis for us?
I do. Daniel touches a device known as a quantum mirror. At first, he thinks nothing happened, only to learn that he is no longer on his Earth. He soon discovers that he is in an alternate reality where Sam Carter is a civilian scientist and Jack is a brigadier general. He must find his way back to his reality, but this proves difficult as, in that universe, the Ghoul are invading Earth and Teal'c is still Apophis's first prime.
All right.
Yes.
Effective.
Yeah.
It does get awkward talking about, like, his Earth, their universe, mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the same thing when we were talking about Tin Man, and it was like, okay, Robo SG-1 and real SG-1.
So what are we going to call them? Like, alternate Jack? Like, what? Are we going to call him Jack? That seems like, are we, like, what?
Yeah, all Jack. All Jack? Well, Daniel okay. can... Well, I'm probably just going to call them by their names.
Eyebrow Scar Jack.
Yeah. I'm just going to call them by their names, because in context, there's only That's one true. Set of them.
That's
up until true. A certain... We'll figure it out.
Listen, I'm going to call Jack James. I'm going to call Carter Bethany. I'm going to call Teal'c Joshua. And Daniel gets to say Daniel.
So much
there, it's settled.
Okay, so Bethany, Joshua, and Daniel, and James all walk through the Stargate. And...
No, they don't, because it's not the alternate version.
That's the alternate versions. Okay, so the episode opens up. SG-1 walks into this lab, and we're clearly on some sort of alien planet a la Tin Man.
Did anyone think it looked like they probably filmed it in the same place?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks very similar. It's like this indoor, industrial-looking kind of structure. Jack opens up with morning campers, which is a phrase we will hear often from him as the series goes on, or just campers in general, I guess. SG-1 splits up to kind of go investigate this planet. P3R233 is the planet, which is important because rarely the names are important, but this time it is. And Carter and Daniel go investigate elsewhere, and Teal'c and Jack stick together, and we find that
there's like a weird cast iron thing.
Yes, and mm-hmm. it's called Kuroshni, and it roughly means turn back, according to Teal'c, our good friend Teal'c, who has all the information. And they all handle this very calmly, but Teal'c informs Jack that this means that the planet has been conquered by the Goa'uld and has been left contaminated, which he says roughly translates into radioactive.
Yep.
I'm just like waiting for y'all to jump in. I just felt like they, like Teal'c says radioactive, and Jack is like, mm-hmm, all right then, I guess.
They're not in immediate danger. They're inside this contained area, and he says on the planet's surface is where the radiation is. So they're not technically in danger.
I was not listening. Critically, clearly. I missed that part.
Also, yeah, I assumed that they would need to, like, hightail it out of there.
Yeah, and the map would have checked.
Map would have checked for radiation levels.
Excellent points. Good job, team. So Teal'c and Jack decide it's time to wrap things up. They go and get Carter and Daniel, who are in this kind of, like, side lab room. And on this table, there's all these, like, alien artifacts, which I thought was funny. They kept referring to this alien planet, alien lab. Like, aren't all planets that they go to alien?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that Jack and Teal'c come into the room and Carter says that she found the souvenir shop.
Yes.
Yes.
Very irreverent sense of humor peeking through there. I wonder who she has that in common with. anyways, but Jack says we gotta wrap things up. Daniel's super excited about all these artifacts, but Jack says we gotta go. Which felt like there could have been some more context there.
Explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you really have to explain it to Daniel. Shouldn't Daniel be like, oh, okay, cool, it's time to go. Like,
but he knows he has to explain it to Daniel.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Sam just comes and she like shrugs her shoulders at Daniel, like, oh, guess we'll find out, because she's a soldier and that's what she's trained to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Daniel looks a little verklempt and he kind of begrudgingly goes, but he starts packing up some of the stuff.
But he vocalizes it too, though.
He does.
Vocalizes how upset he is about leaving.
He gets sassy.
Also, shouldn't they already know better that you don't just, like, you don't say, let's go, and then not have someone behind Daniel? Uh-huh. He's like a toddler. You never have him be the last in the line.
Isn't that what we learned in Sacrifice Moon?
We did learn that in Sacrifice Moon.
You gotta get some, like, Daniel wrangling under your belt.
And usually it's Sam is the one who wrangles him, so I don't know why she just, like, left him in the room.
She was eager to go chase after Jack and look at his backside. That would have been. So Daniel starts packing stuff up into his bag, and he picks up this remote-looking device and starts touching things, as Daniel is wont to do. And as he kind of touches the buttons on this device, the quantum mirror next to the table surges to life, essentially, and it catches Daniel's eye. And he walks over, and of course he touches it.
They all would have touched it except Teal. We all know that they would have.
To be fair, I would have touched it, because if you're standing in front of it, there's no reflection.
There's no reflection.
Like, what is happening here? Like, you can see everything behind you, but you can't see yourself. What are you, a vampire?
Did anybody else think that it was like, he waved his hand in like the weirdest way? it's like it was facing the wrong way, that I would assume would be like the natural way. For some reason he did it like with his hand facing towards him, that was like he was checking his own vision or something. It just looked super weird.
I missed that, but
that's the kind of movement that I do if I'm trying to feel for like if there's static electricity or something, right? Because you can feel the hairs on the back of your head.
Oh.
Your hand stand up. So like, I don't know if that's something I've done where if you put your hand close to...
I've never had to feel for static electricity
before. I haven't either, but now I know to do this.
I know, but it seems like something that Chelsea does a lot.
I know. Well-versed
before.
All right. Anyway, so he touches this quantum mirror. There's some sort of energy surge that visibly, like, there's a CGI effect added to Daniel, so it looks like there's some kind of energy thing happening to him. But... For all intents and purposes, nothing else has changed. He's still in the same lab room. The reflection in the quantum mirror is the same. And he kind of just... Oh, he runs back out into the main room and he's like calling for the rest of SG-1. He's like, guys, we got to bring this thing. I need your help. We got to bring it back through the gate. Except SG-1's gone. And he says, I hate when this happens.
Does that mean that he gets left a lot? Like, do they just leave him on the planet and then, like, go home and then they let him come home later? Like,
I think it's a reference to Fire and Water, right?
Like, well, I mean, sure. He leaps to, like, dialing home, like, oh, man, I hate when this happens. Like, it definitely, it's, I feel like it's inferred or implied that it happened.
Listen, I've not joined you guys for many episodes, but, like, the one episode that I did join you for, Daniel was, like, the one left behind. And so whenever he said that line, like, oh, I hate when this happens, I was like, yeah, why is it always Daniel? Like, gets separated from the group.
There's a theme. We're going to have you for every time. Every
right?
time Daniel
every time
separated.
Daniel's stranded, just call me up and say, like, it is time. Get yourself to your computer immediately.
It's like a bad signal.
It does make me wonder, though, if Jack has, like, acid-seated Daniel before because he was taking too long to look at things. And he's like, fine, we're leaving it that.
Yeah. Which sounds very, like, both very Jack-like, but then also very un-Jack-like at the same time. I feel like it's such a toss-up. I feel like he would be very anti-leaving people behind, but very pro-teaching Daniel a lesson.
But I feel like... I feel like he would do it on planets that he knows that there's not, like a threat,
a danger,
like this
yeah.
one. So, like, he'd be like, he's not coming. We're gone. He can come when he decides he wants to come home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, probably not this one, because they had some safety concerns on this planet. But maybe
That's
even,
fair.
Like, planets they've already been to before, that he would just leave. It's like when your parents used to be like, if you don't stop fighting, I'm kicking you out of the car.
Yes.
One time my dad did that. Yes. My sister out of the car.
My mom also did that to my sister. We literally kicked her out of the car, left her on the side of the road, and started driving off. We went back and got her, but it traumatized her poor 5-year-old self.
She was five?
My sister was like 12.
Oh, no. She was like 5, and we left her on the side of a feeder road.
Oh, my God.
It was fine. She's fine, guys.
I'm sure she's
I've never had that happen or be threatened to me before, so...
I'm just saying. It happens.
Apparently, our parents are quite cruel or something.
Yeah. Apparently, yeah.
My sister must have been actually like 14 or 15 when it happened.
Oh, no. My sister, I think she was 4 or 5.
That is ridiculous.
She was still in a car seat.
What? There were five of us. We were obnoxious.
Yeah. Well, we were also convinced my younger sister was like possessed by the devil because she would have like the worst tantrums. And my mom never had to buy a parenting book until my younger sister is all I'm saying. Anyways, so Daniel dials up, says, dang, SG-1 left me, so I gotta go home. Dials up, no problem, gets back through the gate, arrives back at what he thinks is Stargate Command, but he's met by a troop, essentially, of Stargate personnel with guns trained on him, and they're asking him to identify himself. They don't seem to know who he is. And then we get Hammond walking through the door in some swanky new fatigues.
Yeah, slightly different camo.
Very slightly mm-hmm. different camo. Daniel says General Hammond, and Hammond is Nassim. Oh, great, great, great.
Yeah, so he calls him General Hammond, and we get this.
General, what's this all about?
General, you see stars anywhere on my uniform?
Yeah. Some sass. Look, he may not have the stars, but he still has the sass.
Well, I also feel like it's a call to Colonel O'Neill saying, does it say Colonel anywhere on my uniform?
Yeah.
And it doesn't say Colonel anywhere on my uniform.
So clearly something is very wrong, very different. Our next shot is Daniel being whisked away. He's being forced onto the bed of an MRI scanner. He's being injected with what we think is some sort of sedative while he is being scanned and checked out, which is pretty horrific. And Daniel,
they're looking for gold.
Yes, they are. They are looking to make sure he's not a Goa'uld. He's screaming that he's not one. He wants to talk to Captain Carter. He wants to talk to Colonel O'Neill and
or Janet. He mentions his daughter.
And he says, I don't want to speak to Dr. Frazier. And the airman, whoever it is, that's someone says, like, no, there is no Colonel O'Neill. There's a General O'Neill. And then Daniel kind of blacks out, wakes up. He's in a holding cell, one of those rooms that SG-1 is starting to get really familiar with the little bunk beds.
Especially in the last couple episodes.
Yeah. Yes. Quality time has been spent in these rooms. And Catherine Langford walks in the door. And Daniel jumps up, which is so nice to see her. I think it was fun. Yeah. When we did Torment of Tantalus, I remember us saying how much we enjoyed Catherine in that episode. So I'm always happy to see her. Yeah, so Catherine walks in the door, which was great, and Daniel kind of gets up and starts talking to her like they're friends, like they're familiar, like they normally would. Catherine says, you know, you want to tell me how you came through my Stargate, which I love. I love the possessive my Stargate there. Like, get it, girl, because I feel like you got shut out of the program on our Earth. Like, hell yeah, this is your Stargate. Daniel basically explains that he and Catherine have a history, that he got recruited by her, etc. And Catherine's looking at him like he's a crazy person, like has never seen this man before in her life, doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. And Daniel says, look, unless the last 2 years have been some crazy wacky dream, like, I don't know what to tell you. Which is a good time marker as well, that it's been 2 years since the events of the movie. Yeah. And 1 year since the events of Children of the Gods. Mm-hmm. So we're in a good time marker.
Catherine did say that she reached out to Daniel.
Yeah.
But and he was a douche.
And he was a douche. He was quite rude. Which, like, does not surprise me. Like, the way Daniel could be sometimes doesn't surprise me.
James Spader wasn't that nice to her in the movie, either.
That's fair.
You mean James Spader, the Daniel's character, James Spader, the actor, was horrific too. The actress who played Catherine Langford.
That would be pretty meta if she was bringing gripes from set.
Anywho, so then Dale asks for Sam. He says, can I talk to Captain Carter? And Catherine says Sam isn't in the military. She says that Dr. Carter is here, but she isn't military, and she has a PhD in astrophysics, and that's kind of all we know. And I really felt for Daniel in this scene, and I give props to Michael Shanks as well, because you can kind of, like, feel this, like, desperation that he's trying to make sense of his new reality, and I can't possibly imagine getting in a situation where it's someone you know, you're in a place you know, acting like they've never seen you before, everything's the same but a smidge different, and now you're questioning your sanity, but then maybe their sanity, and, like, I give Michael Shanks big acting props on this scene.
Yeah. No, it is a crazy situation to try and put yourself in mentally.
Yeah. And I had written down, like, a comment that I was, like, I was really annoyed with the way Daniel's, or I guess Michael Shanks's gestures were coming across. Like, it was very, like, I mean, this isn't going to be good for a podcast because it's a visual, but, like, when he was, like, da-da-dun, da-da-dun, like, it was very, like, condescending, like, you're the one who's being crazy.
Oh, like the SG-1 part where he's like, yes. SG-1, and I was
Yes, that's the exact same part, and I was like, don't care for that. But then, I guess, Daniel's in a weird place.
But he's also, you know, super frustrated. I mean, you know, you had to see it from his point of view, where he's, like, super frustrated. Like, he came back, so what he thinks is his world, because he still doesn't know that he's in an alternate reality. So he's just like, I came back, and everything's on its head. And nobody knows who I am. It's
the most epic gaslighting ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So we kind of cut away from that scene, and...
Oh, he mentions Ernest.
Oh, yes.
Freaks Catherine out.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's how Catherine kind of knows that he's legit.
One of my favorite tropes is back.
Yes, it's back. Yep. Character A rattling off things about character B that they know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so Catherine kind of gets this wide-eyed look on her face, and we cut away from that scene, and we see Jack and...
James.
Oh, I'm sorry, James. My apologies. we see alternate Jack, who I'm just going to call Jack from now on to keep things free-flowing. Jack and...
Hammond.
Yep.
Sam is not in there yet.
Yeah, not yet.
And
he's getting a report that 50% of the travelers have gone through to the beta site, which we don't really have much context for, but we will in about 15 minutes. But Catherine kind of comes in and says to Jack that he has to come meet Daniel, basically. And also, it's implied I don't think it's, like, said yet. I think, does Jack introduce himself as the commander of the base when he sees Daniel? Like, when does he introduce himself as the commander of the base?
I think it's implied.
Is it just implied?
I think it's implied because he's the general and everyone's, like, treating him in charge. Yeah.
Okay, so Jack's in charge, and Catherine comes in and says, you gotta come meet Daniel, he knows things.
He does say he's the commander of the base to Teal'c later.
To Teal'c, later. Okay. Mm-hmm. We get to the briefing room. There's a nice touch from the set decorating people whose names I can't remember. But instead of the SGC logo in the background, it says SGA, because we're not at the SGC. We're at the Stargate Administration. I don't know what the A stands for.
I forget. They tell us in an episode.
In Point of View.
Even though that was a different reality.
Well, but it's still SGA.
Maybe it stands for something different in this
one. I don't know. It's SG something, but it's not C. There's an A back there.
I will say that the little touches like that are my favorite things in alternate reality eps in any show.
Yeah, no, agree.
Like Jack's scar on his eyebrow?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That he then later has.
Which he actually gets.
Yeah, he gets it in season 3's episode Demons, in case you're wondering. So Jack walks into the briefing room, and Daniel's like, thank God you're here. Like, what's going on? And Jack's like, who the fuck are you? Like, has no idea. Jack is very, like, down to business. This is not our Jack.
It's almost like movie Jack.
Very much like movie Jack.
I wrote that 1L. Down many times.
Yeah, this is a 1L O'Neill situation. I was going to explain that to Andrea, and then I was
No, I think I got it. Like, so his name was spelled with one L in the movie, and then somehow it just magically got another L.
Yeah, it's because they're two different people.
Great.
They're different but not people, really. But not... It's confusing. And Jack says to Daniel, you know, what do you know about the Goa'uld? So they seem to be pretty convinced that Daniel has some sort of knowledge. And Daniel's like, what are you talking about? Everything that I know, you know. And Jack's like, I don't got time for this shit. Like, you're a crazy person. And we get this trope again of Daniel rattling off information about Jack to kind of convince him that Daniel does know Jack. So he says, your son, I know that your son is dead and that he was killed by your own gun, which, bummer. Like, oof. Alternate reality, you can't even make his Charlie alive? Jesus Christ.
Look, I'm hoping in point of view that was way different because that was never brought up. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Continuum.
Yeah, or, yeah, that's true.
Oh, that's but, right. He lives in Continuum.
Yeah, he does, which is why Jack won't help Sam.
Such a good movie. Okay. Oh,
my God. The angst is so high in that movie. And so, kind of, Daniel is, like, on this, like, kind of, like, stream of consciousness, like, spew of, like, here are all the things I know about you. And then Teal, you know, big guy with the emblem on his head and the gold in his stomach. And, like, we went to Chulak. And everyone's like, whoa, 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 whoa. You went to the homeworld of the Jaffa? And now kind of things kick into gear. Jack and Catherine ask Daniel for the coordinates. There doesn't appear to be a Teal'c in this world on base. They don't seem to know who he is. And then I've lost my notes a little bit here. I just wrote down Chulak coordinates and then long hair Sam.
That's what happens. Oh, okay, great. Sam shows up.
Great. So then Sam shows up and she's got long hair and she's in the killer 90s business lady suit. She looks great.
Looking real great.
Looking just wonderful.
I have to say it every episode just so everybody knows.
Amanda Tapping says in the companion, she said, this episode was a dream come true. I remember getting to have hair. That was one of her quotes. So she was real excited for this wig.
It was a good wig.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, it was good.
People shit on the point of view wig. I like the point of view wig. And I like this wig, too.
I like this wig because it has bangs and it looks better, whereas the point of view one, just, it doesn't work as well.
I like this one better.
Same.
I stand by what I said.
That's you. You know what? We have our opinions and you have your opinion. It's totally fine.
No, we all must have the same opinion, Melanie.
I'm biased towards short hair anyway.
It's in the podcast. Yeah,
so. Me to Chelsea. We're on the same page. And Andrew.
Yep. Yeah.
Don't look over here. So Sam shows up. She's not our Sam, but she's looking as beautiful as ever. And she reports that they just lost Washington and Philly. And now I'm going to stop talking because Chelsea's going to take over for the middle bits.
Oh my god, that means it's my turn to talk.
Melanie's going to take over the middle bits.
Daniel kind of looks at Sam and Jack and is kind of like, what do you mean we've lost Washington and Philly? And
what's clicking?
Sorry, that's my pen. Sorry, I threw it away. It's over there now.
like a quiet fidget spinner.
Yeah, so then Jack tells Sam to show him, and they go down to the control room? Mm-hmm. Yep, control room. And Sam shows Daniel this map and says that, like, every little red space, like, everything that's on red has been destroyed, which is a good chunk of...
Of Europe for some reason. Yeah, okay. Like it zooms in. It's like we lost Washington and Philadelphia, and then it like zooms in on like the UK. But Scotland is still going strong. I just wanted to point that out. Good old Scotland.
Yeah, they're smaller. It's
not a big target, Scotland.
I mean, but they did seem to want to take out like Portugal and Spain. Like, I mean, yeah. Out of all those, I think Scotland would have been. So that little thing in the ocean, you just hit that and it's gone. But you know,
right? I mean, they already took out England. Like, they just stopped the northern journey.
They learned about the Battle of Britain and knew that they needed to take out England straight away.
Yeah, the gold are big on world history.
Apparently. Then they find out that, Daniel finds out that the ghouls showed up about 4 days ago in their ship, so that's all happened in 4 days, which is actually kind of ridiculous that they've destroyed that much.
It's pretty scary.
Which I was thinking to myself while I was watching this, like, why didn't they just call some of their allies? Only to realize they don't have any yet. So,
yeah.
They couldn't ask anybody for help.
And we have no idea, like, who...
Or who they know.
Who they know. Who they know. Because SG-1 hasn't done as much traveling or, like, contacted as many people.
Oh, well, so it seems like we don't find out for sure. Daniel brings up Abydos and says, I know you were sent through on a suicide mission and that he did at least kill Ra, mm-hmm. but they didn't go back, I don't think, maybe to Abydos, and maybe they didn't find the big room full of all of the gate addresses.
Maybe. I just assumed that they just didn't go back because they were too busy sending nukes through every single time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're also probably right. They probably didn't go back and find the cartouche either.
Well, because if Jack didn't leave Daniel behind with, like, Sharae, maybe he really did blow up Abydos.
That's very possible. I mean, maybe that was the only way that they could kill Ra, because maybe they didn't kill Ra on the ship. They killed him on the planet.
Right, because Daniel's the one who kind of helped kill
Ra, Ra
and bring the nuke up into his ship.
Hmm.
So.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. If without Daniel there, Abydos would have gone down completely differently. So.
That's very true.
Who knows what happened there. And they got a lot of intel from there.
Yes. Then after that, after we learned that they showed up 4 days ago, I immediately cut to Daniel talking to Catherine about the remote. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
All right, cool. So Daniel and Catherine talk about the remote. Shows her the remote that he touched before touching the quantum mirror. And as he's explaining it to her, he notices that the gate winds up and the big kaloosh comes through and... He's kind of like, what's happening up there? And he sees that they're sending a nuke through. And so he immediately goes back down to the control room and is like, why are you sending a nuke to Chulak? Like, they're all, like, people who, like, it's just the Jaffa are slaves, and which is basically what Chulak is made up of. And they really don't have any say in what they can do. They can only do, you know, what their god tells them they can do, basically. And Jack has no pity for them at all.
He also doesn't care, because Sam also mentions that she thinks it's unwise to put off doing the Genesis list,
which is also to do this. Very smart.
Yeah, like, it seems more important to be saving as many people from Earth as you can than to be getting, like, it's no, there's no tactical advantage to nuking Chulak.
Unless he feels that, like, if he took out, I kind of took it as if he takes out Chulak, we're cutting off, like, a source
reinforcements.
Yeah, reinforcements, essentially. Like, he's thinking more militarily in the moment than he is, like, long term.
Right, but even in the moment, as far as we know, and as far as I think they know, the Jaffa on Chulak aren't getting to, the only way they're getting to Earth is through the gate, right?
Right, but I think for Jack, it's like, okay, but if I can kill everybody on Chulak, then that's an entire planet's worth of army people, like Andrea said, reinforcements. So, like, no, it's not coming through the gate, but they've got, they said earlier that the gold are coming on ships, so for all we know, they're, like, zooming back and forth.
I agree. I think he's probably thinking that it probably doesn't do much to solve their current situation, but it will definitely prevent future attacks.
On other people. Right.
Yeah.
Assuming, because right. I'm assuming that they're, well, I mean, I guess they don't know that they're all lost yet, but.
They've killed 1.5 billion people in 4 days.
Right. That's the other thing, too, is, like, he, like, all of the, like, quote-unquote big decisions that, like, Jack faces this episode about, like, we can save people or we can murder people. It's also, like, very much, I found myself having to remind myself that in 4 days, they've lost 1.5 billion people. They've been under attack. They've been fielding all this shit. Like, you're probably on the defensive, and, like, maybe in any other situation, like, later down the line, there's, like, a time and a place for the, I think he calls it, like, an academic argument later, but there's a time and a place for, like, but what about the innocents? But, like, 4 days deep, you're almost 2 billion of your planet's dead. You're not thinking about that. You're thinking either revenge or what can I do in the absolute immediate to kind of stymie some of this.
Why wouldn't you try and get the people to the beta site first instead of sending, like, nukes to random places? I realize that he's taking out people for future things, but you would think that the more important thing would be to send people to the beta site to get the people that are most important to the beta site, rather than sending, you know, nukes to Chulak or nukes to, you know, wherever they're sending them to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that Sam's suggestion is more like pressing. And if I were faced with the decision between the two, I would definitely side with hers. I do think that Jack had some sort of strategy in mind, though. I don't think it was just blind, like, I don't care, I'm going to nuke him.
Honestly, I think it was a little bit that.
I think it was a little bit that, too.
And I don't fault him for it, either. Because it also seemed to me the way Sam phrased it made it sound like their standing orders were to get through the Genesis list as quickly as they could.
Right.
And so it almost felt a little bit like Jack was kind of blowing off that. Orders. Now, granted, he's a general. He's in charge of the SDC. It seems like a lot of the military command will be gone at this point. He'd probably feel some leeway to make decisions as he sees fit.
This was also pre, like, the wormhole being blocked, because they only blocked the wormhole after the bomb went through. So maybe Jack just thought, like, it doesn't really matter the order of things. Like, we'll send the bomb and then send through the beta site people. They weren't thinking about the wormhole being
blocked.
Held open.
Right.
So maybe he didn't consider it, like, it wasn't important.
Right.
Also, during the scene, it's also very important that at every moment possible, we acknowledge that Sam is wearing an engagement ring.
That's
I'm sorry. You missed it. Sorry, Jess. I was talking about how Sam was showing Daniel the map.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Also, when she was typing, you could also see her engagement ring, just so Jess knows.
And that it was she does this motion, and it's right there.
Okay, listen, I totally missed all of that.
Well, you wouldn't have known they were engaged yet. He wouldn't have been looking for it.
Yeah, that's true. Did you guys know that they were engaged?
Yeah, this isn't our first time watching it.
Oh, right. Okay, no. Okay, I got you. I thought you were insinuating that, like, it had been established earlier in the series.
Oh, no.
But, okay.
But I guess you could have seen it and been like, hey, now what's that?
Yeah.
But I won't lie. The first time I watched it, I didn't see it either. So, like, when they announced it, I was like, what in the actual fuck? All right. Okay, so then after Daniel realizes that he's not going to get through to Jack, and Jack leaves because Jack tells them to get Daniel out of there because he's not helping the situation. He's just apparently furthering Jack's annoyance.
As per usual.
Daniel kind of has like a freak out moment. And it's kind of like, is it possible that I wound up on a different Earth when I went to the Stargate?
No. I definitely wrote, duh, Daniel, on my page.
You say duh, but would you think that?
Well, I'm sorry. One episode ago, they leapt to a robot with my consciousness has been transferred into a robot in the first 10 minutes.
Sam did. He needed Sam there.
I mean, and then
Sam is the one who figures it out.
And Sam is the one who immediately gets up and is like starts to like spew science geek out.
She's so great in this episode.
And she's basically like, well, no, not if you went through the Stargate, it wouldn't make sense. But like, God, there's a lot of technobabble in that whole like 5 minutes. Do you have it?
I have part of it. Great. I don't know. I don't remember exactly which parts, but let's see what I got.
Basically, scientists have theorized that there are an infinite number of dimensions, each containing a different possible version of reality.
Well, it sounds like I theoretically, possibly, actually found one.
One what?
What Sam said, alternate reality, a parallel plane. I mean, wouldn't that explain why everything here is the same, but different?
Okay, the theory is that there are an infinite number of alternate realities. Some of them are very different, and some are almost identical.
That has to be what this is. So this isn't my world at all. This is some sort of other dimension.
I love the way you kind of coughs. Are you kidding me?
I got the impression that like somebody cracked him up behind camera, and he just continued on with his line.
Or maybe he realized the absurdity of like the line he was delivering, and he just went with it.
So. Yes, he delivers that line in a cool way. I appreciate that.
I did also appreciate how he delivered that line, actually.
I also love Sam just geeking out. Yes. Always.
Yes.
Oh, you know, I think I sent y'all a text message, like, when that immediately happened, like, the stupid smile I had on my face was stupid. It was so dumb. And it happens all the time. Oh.
Sam feels to me, like, in these, like, two scenes in particular, like, the one right before this and then the one right here, like, she, this is a more, even though she's not in the military, she seems like she's just as confident, if not more confident, than, were you about to say that, Melanie?
That's actually, like, the next thing in my notes.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. No, keep going.
That was really it. She's more confident, and it's really cool.
It wasn't quite that, but, like, so, she seems to give, so, like, to piggyback off what you said, she seems to, like, give orders, and people immediately, like, respond to that. And so, like, it's almost like Sam and Jack are running the SGA together, whereas, you know, it's not in our reality. So.
Can I suggest maybe why?
Yes.
They're fucking...
So maybe the Sam in this reality didn't go into the military because her mom didn't die when she was a teenager.
Ooh.
And so she had her mom's influence through her teen years and felt free to pursue her own passions and then didn't have to go through like the probably horrible and degrading process of doing the military in the late 80s, early 90s as a woman.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what, like, Sam's branching moment was. Because, like, I think it's, like, the SG-1 wiki, I think, notes that the branching moment for this universe, in terms of, like, what happens to SG-1 and stuff, is not going...
Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel saying no. But I'd love to know, like, in Sam's personal life, what her branch moment was.
I'm positing that it's her mom didn't die.
I like that.
That would be interesting. Because then that also has implications for, like, our Sam and, like, as we meet Jacob later, like, how much of that... Because, like, I almost feel like... I know we're... This is not related to this episode exactly. But I almost feel like if I was Sam and my mom died and I have a bad relationship with my dad, I wouldn't go military.
Right.
Or I guess you would go military to try and get his approval.
Yeah, that's how I take it. 50-50. Maybe not...
Or Sam just loves the military. Who knows?
I think she wanted to be an astronaut, right?
Like, right.
So she joined the Air Force.
I think she did. And then when the Stargate program came about, she wanted to work on that rather than, you know.
Right. But Chelsea's point is that this Sam didn't want to be an astronaut.
Okay. Sorry. Look, yo, we're talking about... It's hard for me to, like... So then... All of a sudden, someone comes up on, the PA system, or whatever you want to call that. I don't want to call it a PA system, but, like...
The PA system.
Okay, the PA system. That Air Force One has sent in, like, a coded message. And so...
Just real quick, before that, Catherine suggests that it wasn't the wormhole that sent him astray.
It was the mirror.
Yeah.
Hey, good call. Way to go.
Yeah. Good job.
Way to go. Help me out. I didn't write that down. So, yes, Air Force One sent in a message and then they decoded the message, put it over the PA system, and basically they watched Air Force One on the little computer screen with awesome 90s graphics get blown up.
The shadow looked great. That massive shadow coming over, and I was like, oh, that looks pretty good. And then I saw the ship and I was like, oh, that looks very not good.
Air Force One got taken out, so the president is now no longer with them.
There's also I wrote down that there was this little throwaway line where Daniel's just like, guess I'm dead in Egypt somewhere.
Oh my god, I think I'm dead.
Yes.
Yeah, it was random.
Because Sam
was pretty
like,
cool with it, and it has like no bearing on the rest of the episode. I guess it's just trying to explain for all those like you know smarty pants in the audience. Like, but where's the other Daniel? He should have you know some sort of like existential crisis seeing himself.
Which is actually good, because when we get to Point of View, which is another episode in season 3 where we get an alternate Sam coming to our world this time, there's, like, this problem where you can't have two Sams in the same alternate universe, or the same universe, and there's, like, this...
So it tears them apart or something.
It tears, like, yeah, you can't, you can't. So I think with Daniel dead, that kind of solves that problem here.
But not we didn't know that now.
But we don't know that now, but like on the rewatch, it holds up because the science checks out. The science checks out. Like, it's a real thing.
I mean, it causes this like theoretical problem, and so the fact that they like threw in this little line to address it, I don't have any major qualms with it. It just did feel super random.
it did feel out of place.
And the way that he delivered it was like, it was just like, hey, I'm dead.
It also proves that even before Google, you couldn't resist Googling yourself.
Yeah.
However, that Google didn't have any information on him at all.
None. No. He was in Egypt. That was it.
Let's
see. Air Force One got taken out.
Jack calls Harriman Airman.
Airman. Yep. Got that.
But he's in civvies. Why? I don't. Why was Harriman wearing civvies if he's still
Thank you. Because, do you know how many times I had to pause and check if he was wearing a sweater vest? I was like, wait, is that part of his uniform or is it a sweater vest?
Because the military's basically gone now. Everybody's lax. It's super fine.
Everyone else is wearing a uniform.
In 4 days, it all fell apart.
Well, and it'd be like one thing if he's like frazzled and like his tie's undone and he's all... But no, he's like nicely dressed up in his sweater vest and nice pressed white shirt and a tie. And
Why don't you tweet Gary Jones so you can ask him?
Yeah. Why were you wearing this? I also love the absolute lack of personal space between a certain general and a certain astrophysicist. I just think you should go and watch that scene. They're like hunched over that computer pretty tightly is all I'm saying.
They are engaged.
I mean, I know. Yeah, they are.
Oh, no, I know. But we don't know that yet. And it's just really enjoyable. That's all I'm saying.
It is. Yes, it is. All right, moving on.
The mothership comes over the mountain, and you see, as Andrea said, the cool shadow effect. And then the cool ship.
Great shadow. 10 out of 10.
And it's on our like stock outside SGC footage as well. It's for that same truck exactly where it always is.
The same. For 10 years.
For 10 years, that truck just never moves.
But now it has shade.
And then Sam makes this comment about how if they do fire on them, that they won't feel it. And I'm like, that's not helpful in the situation.
It's her own personal brand of optimism.
Well, I thought the implication was they won't feel it because they'll be dead.
You know, it is. That's my point, though. It's not helpful in the situation because they're still going to die.
But she phrased it like, the good news is, when they do kill us, we're not going to feel it. It's like a 2 megaton warhead. We're fine. 200 megaton warhead.
Yeah. I was like, that's not helpful, but thank you.
I felt comforted by it. I don't want to feel my death. Thank you.
Oh, and then, like, it cuts to a commercial break, and then we come back, and we're in the briefing group. Right?
Well, I have a note here that says Jack is in charge. Very military. Very hot. Yeah, very hot.
I mean,
He's planning the mountain's defense.
Yes, yeah, he's planning the mountain's defense, and he says that all non-essential SGA need to get to the beta site, and looks at Catherine and looks at Sam. I don't know if he's talking to Sam in that situation, that she needs to go to the beta site.
Yeah.
But that's how I read it.
Yeah.
And then Jack leaves and goes and fortifies the base.
Well, but Sam tells them they can't evacuate because the Goa'uld have opened a wormhole.
That too.
Yeah. And he, like, blows up an elevator shaft to stop some of the movement of the Goa'uld into the base.
Yeah. Well, then Daniel also has to throw in the punch there of, they probably opened the wormhole because you bombed Chula.
Yeah.
And then Sam immediately comes to his defense and is like, that's not relevant to the situation right now.
Yeah. Although bombing Chula will come back and really... bite him in the ass.
It will.
But yes, then we get to the briefing room.
Why are we in the briefing room? I thought we were just in the briefing room.
We were in the briefing room this whole time.
Oh,
this
okay.
is all in the briefing
okay,
room.
Okay, sorry, yeah. Look.
No, they were in the
Well, they were in the
room
control room.
They were in the control
they
room.
They were in the control room. Yeah. Then we go upstairs.
Yeah, now we're in the briefing room.
Is this where you found the transmission?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. All right, cool. So, they have, now Sam and Catherine have Daniel... unencoding this transmission because he can speak
Abydonian,
yeah, ancient Egyptian functionally. Yeah.
Okay, so
well, and the reason that they have it is because Daniel says in his first briefing with Jack that he was on P3R233, and they're like, "Whoa, we went there too," and that's why they're doing this. It's not like out of the blue.
Because they found the transmission in that area of space, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then they went there.
They went there, yeah.
After they got the transmission.
But there was no quantum mirror there when they went there.
They didn't see it.
They didn't see it. They weren't looking for it, I don't think.
Okay, well, I said they didn't find it. But anyway.
They didn't see it. But that's Daniel uses it to get back. So, like, the quantum mirror had to be there.
Oh, that's right. He does.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
He came to this reality through it.
That makes sense.
And he goes back through it.
Anyway, so they didn't see the mirror. And then as he's de-encrypting this message, he writes it out and he says, it says, beware the destroyers. They come from, and then he's like, I can't make out what these beeps are or whatever. And Sam says that they've decoded like this like numbers. So I didn't write the numbers down. Guys, I don't know what the numbers are.
That's not relevant.
But
there was a 6 in there.
Stargate. There was a 10. 32.
There was an 8.
It's, yeah.
4, 8, 15, 16, 20.
There's 6 of them, and they make a Stargate address. That's really all you need to know.
They make quite a leap there. There's a lot of leaps happening in this scene.
It's Daniel. He already did this before.
It's Daniel and Sam.
Well, Daniel's the one who says there's 6 numbers. It's a gate address without the point of origin.
Oh. Yeah. How did we feel about Daniel's delivery of, you didn't hear it spoken aloud? When Catherine was like,
oh, amazing. That it felt snarky.
Yeah, because Sam then like makes a face and looks at Catherine like, this fucker.
I mean, to me, it felt like presumably people on Earth have studied ancient Egyptian. They could read it. But of course, there's nobody alive today who could understand it spoken.
Oh, totally. I guess I'm not taking umbrage with the fact that he said it. And I don't think he even said it in, like, a particularly, like, I don't think he intended it in a, like, haughty kind of way. But because that's a great example of how, like, someone who doesn't, like, this Sam doesn't know Daniel the way that our Sam knows Daniel. And how that can come off, like, the Catherine being like, and you were quite rude. Like, that could totally come off to me as, like, this, like, dick face, like, well, you didn't hear it spoken aloud for years. Like, it's like, okay, sir, we get it. You lived on Abydos, you heard it out loud. Just, and the only reason I'm making that is because, one, it irritated me, and two, because we get that shot of Sam making the face at Catherine immediately. It's like a close-up on Sam's face, like, kind of rolling her eyes and looking at Catherine.
See, because I kind of read it as the opposite of, like, because they were like, we tried to, we couldn't understand it. And he's like, well, of course you couldn't, because you didn't have this same experience that I had. Like, I thought he was kind of absolving them of being like, there's no way you could have decoded this. You didn't live on a planet that spoke this language.
Right. That's how I think he meant it. But I'm just saying that because, and we know he meant it that way because we know Daniel, but these guys don't know Daniel. And so it came off the other way. Hence the eye rolling. Just, I don't know. Yeah. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Sorry.
No, you're good. So, yes.
New podcast game. Take a shot every time we say, no, you're good.
The good news is when we all have different feeds, I can cut all that crap out. Interrupting each
other. So, Daniel says that it's a Stargate address, but it was missing the point of origin, and they're like, well, how do we figure out, you know, what the points are on the Stargate for it to be, like, the correct Stargate address? Because we don't know what the point of origin is on this planet.
Right.
And then Daniel's like, I have it on my videotape recorder.
I hate that. I hate it so much. Yeah. Daniel, why didn't you pull that out 40 minutes ago?
Why would it have been useful 40 minutes ago?
Because they were all questioning what he was saying.
Yeah.
He'd be like, wait, I have physical proof that everything I'm saying is true. I'm assuming
they took it away.
But he could say that he had it.
Yeah. Say, I have proof. It's in my bag. Go get it. And then, they already
believed him, basically, once he brought up Ernest.
Right. But he could have avoided all that and just been like, hey, something's weird here. I recorded this trip.
But Catherine was basically the first person he spoke to. So it's like he got dragged away. They checked he was a Goa'uld, which they were going to do whether he was like, but look at the video camera in my bag.
Right.
And then he comes to and he talks to Catherine and she believed him, kind of.
But instead of having to convince Catherine and Jack and Sam and like everyone else under the sun, he could have just been like, hey, I've got this videotape. It's got the entirety of SG-1. It's got this quantum thingy-majiggy. I can show you the
It has Teal'c, and I can show you that Teal'c. He's a good guy.
It's
like,
got Colonel O'Neill. You call him General. I call him Colonel.
It has some Captain Carter.
Some of you call him James. Captain Carter. Dr. Carter. Some of you call her Bethany. Whichever you prefer, I got him on tape. It just felt like a very, like, what's it called? Like a do ex machina? Like
Deus?
Yeah. Very, very much like, oh, great. I record this whole thing. We have a point of origin now.
Yeah. Although they did at least set it up. We watched him
specifically filming. Mm-hmm. And they even gave us, like, a view through his camera that he was recording.
Yeah.
I get it. He should have brought it up earlier. That's a common theme on this show.
So true. I mean, it is. But it is. We still love it, though, right? I mean.
Also, though, I could legit see myself doing this, though, being like, oh, wait, guys, I have a video.
And then we cut to Jack is in this hallway, mm-hmm. and he's getting ready for the incursion. And I'm just saying, the way that he cocks the MP5 was really hot.
Loud! So good. The swagger he has. So good. He's so hot.
And then the Jaffa come. I mean, I thought it was very...
Dramatic
and, like...
I liked it.
I mean, no, I liked it. I just... How did they know they were going to come through that wall?
Because they set up the only way they could get down there.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. All right. That makes more sense then.
I did think, though, that, like, firefight in the hallway was a little... I wasn't satisfied with the build-up to it. Like, I would have really liked to see some, like, security footage of, like, all the bad guys, like, running through the halls and be like, oh, man, like, we gotta get to this spot really quick. Like, they're about to break through any second. Like,
yeah,
we haven't actually laid eyes on the attackers. And sorry, mm-hmm. I keep forgetting what they're called.
Jaffa.
We haven't laid eyes on the Jaffa the entire episode, like, except for the shadow and, like, that, like, ship docking. Every other time that the Jaffa are mentioned, it's always just, like, they're just mentioned. We don't actually see the threat until, like, there's an explosion and those two guys come from around the corner and then, like, everybody starts firing. But, like, it didn't feel like a very big moment, and I just felt like they needed more build up to that. That was my one complaint.
So they did try to create some suspense here, because right before the firefight, the incoming wormhole blinks out. And they run downstairs into the control room. And they're like, start dialing. Mm-hmm. And Harriman has already started dialing, and he's encoding. And he tells Daniel that they have to get the seventh chevron locked
before
a wormhole comes in. And so they're kind of start creating suspense because they start that. They're like, chevron thee encoded. And then we go to the firefight. And so it's like a two-front. It's like a two-front battle. But I agree. Like, then the Jaffa just show up out of nowhere. Because they're on, like, 28 stories down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They had to, and there had to have been lots of fights on the way down.
And to Andrea's point, too, about it, like, not feeling, like, I guess satisfactory, it's also, like, happening in a very small, narrow hallway, and there's, like, they're, like, stacked 2x2, and it's just, like...
Yeah.
It isn't as, like, grand.
It feels like a really small attack. Like, just seeing a couple guys come through the doorway... Two or three at a time. Whereas, like, I felt like what I really needed to see, like I said, that security footage. I would have loved to see a security footage of a hallway just flooded with these guys. And, like, you don't have to, you don't, like, that's really easy to do. And so the fact that they didn't do that, it's like, oh, come on, this is a really simple fix, and I don't know why it's not in the episode, but I really missed it. Especially,
that's not tactically smart, though, to put your guys in a firing hole like
that. Yeah, exactly. Well, see, that's, I mean, now that you brought it up, like, and I've been thinking about it as you've been talking about it, like, I mean, I don't understand, A, how they all got, like, how they got defeated by the Jaffa, because all you have to do is keep shooting in the hole, and you'll hit them. Like, and somehow they got overpowered by, like, four of them.
I also feel it has something to do with, like, resources, and, like, at some point, like, you've got a staff energy and numbers on one side. So, yes, you've got, like, a whole situation, but they ended up retreating. You don't want, you have, like, a limited finite number of bullets to expend, and, like, they retreat pretty quickly, but kind of back to, like, the unsatisfactory, like, it's literally a couple burst of fire exchange, and then they take off and they, like, close the blast door. So I see what you're saying, like, ideally, but you have to remember that there's a finite set of resources on one end and an infinite number on the other end. So you can sit and shoot into that hole and take out some more people, but that's also not their, like, tactical objective either. Like, they're just trying to stall and create time to open up the wormhole to escape to the beta site. So I just feel like if their goal was to shoot fish in a barrel, they would have redirected resources, but I don't think that was the goal. But who knows? None of us here are military, so God knows.
Well, at the when Jack was setting up the defenses, he said, I want two automatic guns here at one point. Mm-hmm. And so I assume that was up at the top, like their first line of defense, and they would have had to get through. Like, I'm assuming they took out a fair amount of Jaffa on the way down.
Good thing they bombed Chulak to stop the reinforcements coming back.
Which comes back to bite people in the ass.
It does.
Just saying. So they shoot fish in a barrel for a bit, like we said, and then they go back down to the control room, and they're still trying to dial out, and then they get beaten by Chulak to dial out first, and Sam is visibly upset.
Yeah.
And then we find out that they kept the gate open for 38 minutes, which is a long time.
And it's the number that they're going to keep using for the rest of the series, mm-hmm. which is, I really appreciate the continuity there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We cut back to the hole and we see Teal'c come through the hole.
Looking super evil. He looks
so pissed.
The close up on his face. He's doing his really dour face.
Yes, Christopher Judge has the ability to really downturn his whole mouth into like the most severe frown. It's impressive.
Sam says she's going to work on speeding up the dialing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, if you think about it, like, back when Daniel was like, oh, man, they left me behind. Guess I got to go home. He just, like, smacks, boop, bop, boop, bop, boop.
Yeah, it takes no time whatsoever to hit the buttons. But, like, to think about the thing, like, dialing through, like, your computer, it just takes so long. Like a rotary phone.
The rotary phone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like trying to dial faster than someone on a rotary phone versus
like a cell phone.
Me dial on my cell
phone. Yeah.
Two.
and then you have to announce every time that you press a button.
You don't have to. That's just what his job is.
No, it's required. It's absolutely required. The Stargate will not work if you don't announce when the chevrons are locked.
Encoded.
Encoded, yes.
Only Chevron 7 locked.
Yes. Excuse me.
Clearly, my Stargate's not
launching. My Stargate's not launching.
You're kicked out of the podcast.
Okay, bye, guys. It's been real. We made it 20 episodes. Bye-bye.
Does that mean I've been promoted?
Yes. Andrew's taking over.
Yeah, but if you're taking over for Jess, you're going to have to watch the whole series a couple times and really dial in the Sam Jack shipping.
Yeah, right. It's also important that you start, you got to mention Dick at least once or twice an episode.
Okay.
Keep it explicit when possible.
And
keep it coming. Sam, I'm writing
Jack
all this down.
Look at each other, whenever Sam and Jack look, it's something every single time.
Yeah, that's the guide to being Jess. You got it. That's it.
Great.
You also have to notice every one of Jack's new outfits.
Yes, particularly we really enjoy backward baseball caps and dog tags. These are our primary sources of joy.
And those goggles.
Yeah. Ooh, the bugaboos.
All right. Yes. Big here fans. We go. I'm writing down all these notes.
Guys.
I will usurp you one day, Jessica.
You are more than welcome. Carry on my legacy.
She wants to leave, Chelsea. Did you hear that?
Y'all ain't getting rid of me. I'm gonna haunt you. Anyway, Teal'c's an enemy.
Teal'c's mad.
Yep.
And then
he's got the awesome high pony.
Oh yeah, he does. He's got some serious hair.
We don't see that yet because he's wearing his helmet.
Oh, that's right. We don't. Yeah.
Yeah. I have the note at the next.
And then we go back to the control room.
Yes.
And Daniel's working on the Stargate address, and he figures it out, and then tells Sam and Catherine that we have it, which Hammond finds out about and tells Jack.
Catherine tells Jack.
I thought Hammond told Jack.
I don't remember. I just said that Catherine thinks they have it.
Okay, someone told Jack that we have the address for the cool old place where this
attack originated.
Thank you.
I got you.
Where the attack originated. And then they start arguing. Not really arguing. I don't arguing, having a debate about whether or not to send a bomb through or dialing to get themselves out. Yeah. And, I mean, again, Jack is all gung-ho about sending another bomb through to this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I know that nobody knows that it's not a planet, it's a ship. But...
Right.
Well, it's interesting, so, like, so after I watch the episode, I usually go to the SG-1 wiki just to look at the, like, notes and stuff to see if there's anything worth, like, mentioning on here. And under their goof section, it's like, did they just forget that it doesn't have to be one or the other? That you could literally, like... Because their argument was, we only have one shot. Like, once the wormhole disappears, we only have one shot to dial out. And so, the SG-1 wiki's point was basically... Why not just go to the dial the beta site, bring the bomb with you, and then dial from the beta site to the planet? Like there, yeah. I wrote that down. I was like, they could go to P3R233 and then send people to the beta site from there and the bomb to the
They were acting like they could only have one or the other when it's like you could just dial to a safe planet and then dial out. Once you're somewhere safe.
I'm going to assume that no one's thinking clearly at this point in time you know, we've lost 1.5 billion people in the world. I guarantee you that none of them have slept in 4 days. Like, we're not thinking rationally at this moment. And it's like, we can only do one.
Which is scary, though, because they've got these nuclear bombs they keep trying to throw through the gate. And I'd like it if someone was thinking rationally.
I mean, yeah.
So I see what you're saying, but also it's like, I feel like that would have been like a really simple solution to the problem.
Also, is it really that easy for a 1-star Air Force general to have this access to nukes to just throw and toss
and
around?
A lot of them.
Because I'm just seeing Dr. Strangelove happening in my head.
Yeah.
I mean, he's even named Jack. General Jack D. Ripper. General Jack O'Neill.
It's got levels.
James.
Yeah, please. James has a formal name. His formal name.
And then Daniel randomly has his video playing on in the background. Like, his video playing on in the background?
It's not random. He was trying to... He was getting the
configuration. Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm sorry. I forgot he was decoding. Still.
Yeah.
But then Jack sees himself on the camera and goes, what the hell is that?
Mm-hmm.
yes. Which, I mean,
has Sam
to be,
sees it.
You have it.
I have Sam's reaction. Because she's adorable and I love her.
We are actually looking at ourselves in a parallel universe. Another version of our lives that actually exists. It's incredible.
It's such a great use of background music, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a geek. She's the best.
Well, it's like, she's legit about to die. And their planet is going to be destroyed, but she still is, like, so... tickled by the fact of this awesome theory, this thing that she never thought she'd see proven as reality happening before her. And it almost feels like the best thing that could happen to Sam before she faces certain death. It's like, but I got to see an alternate reality version of myself, so that's cool.
Her reaction was very similar to like when she met her robo self, and it was like, this is incredible and amazing, and like, look at the powers that we have.
I think almost anything science related is incredible to her, especially like when something gets proven. Like, she just can't help herself from being like wondered by it.
Yeah.
Or when it's disproven, because in Tin Man she's like, but that it, you know, that doesn't work with the uncertainty principle. Like, I know, it doesn't make sense, it's so cool.
And then Daniel says something to the effect of, I know this is selfish, but your planet's basically toast.
Yep.
I can save my planet. Can I use the last dial out to get to this planet so I can get back to my reality?
And warn them. Which, does that feel... Okay, now, I know this is, like, fake science, so anything's possible, but, like... It felt weird to me that the assumption that, like, what would happen on this Earth would definitely happen on... Like, I guess it's worth checking out, but the sense of urgency... Like, so many things were already different. I just found it strange that he was so convinced that all the information would be this, like, transferable, basically. Or this was like, a prophecy.
I think it was the chain of events. So, like, you killed Ra, and I assume Apophis...
We don't know if they've met and killed... Apophis in this reality. So to me, the reasoning behind it for Daniel is they've already been assuming that the Goa'uld will be coming with ships. That's kind of what Teal'c told them because remember they kept sending things through and they were like, hey, Teal'c, when are they going to stop? And he's like, well, you know, when they think you've been destroyed, they'll start sending people through. But once they realize that it didn't work, they'll send ships. And so there's already the presumption that Apophis is going to send ships. And so Daniel comes to this planet, sees that what Apophis did send ships.
And it was bad.
Didn't go great. Yeah. And he now has possibly the point of origin of the attack. And so maybe this reality is ahead of them a little bit. Maybe they didn't shut down the program after Abydos and went and pissed off Apophis a little sooner. Who knows why they're like a couple months ahead of our reality. But all he knows is maybe if I know where the attack is coming from, we can do something to stop it. Because they do know that an attack is imminent.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, I buy it. I believe it. But there was I just had the question where it was like, man, he's just so certain that it's definitely going to happen. And it's like, it's transferable.
Yeah, I think part of it is because he is so shaken by
the events.
There's so much that's similar.
And then to round out my thing, I just want to say that when Jack was talking to Daniel about letting him use the gate to save his planet rather than, you know, trying to save people for Jack's planet, as he was trying to talk science, he deferred to Sam to try and make sure that he was using the correct term.
Yep.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's Chelsea's turn.
It was cute. Yeah, I do think it's worth mentioning that Daniel, so this is something where Daniel isn't saying it's at the exclusion of saving their people. He wants them to dial P3R233, but when they get to that point, Jack says he wants all non-essential personnel evacuating with Daniel, basically. Like, Sam is going to go with Daniel. She runs to grab the remote and come with him, but she gets killed before she can get there. So it wasn't choosing between, it was basically him choosing between bombing or making another dial. And in this case, which makes it even more frustrating because it does seem like they know, hey, Sam and whoever else can go with Daniel to P3R233 and then they can dial from there to the beta site. Because Sam is planning on going with him, but all the other non-essential personnel get killed before.
I must have missed that part.
I don't think, I didn't think Sam was intending to go with Daniel. I know she was running up the stairs because she was like, if you're going to use the mirror, you're going to need that remote. So to me, it sounded like she was just going upstairs to grab it for him. I don't know.
No, because Catherine said she was going to stay, behind
that's
and
right.
dial. And she tells Sam to go. And Sam is like, no. And Catherine's like, you go. So, I mean, that's a little later. But anyway, yeah. So Jack and Daniel have a little argument.
Not just yourselves, everyone on Earth.
Your Earth.
The Jack O'Neill that I know would do it.
Well, apparently you and I have never met.
No, I guess not.
Yeah.
It makes me so sad.
It makes me sad too that was I felt bad for Daniel in that moment. I felt like it's such a frustrating situation. These are people, Daniel thinks that he knows these people, but they're not quite who they think they are. Jack is dealing with his planet being extinguished basically at this point, and there's some crazy man saying that he's from a different world. Like, it's a very frustrating situation.
Yep. Jack says that it's an academic argument anyway because they can't hold them off long enough to get the wormhole open again anyway.
Yeah.
Because basically Sam's like, well, we have 20 minutes before we can even try to dial out again. And Jack's like, yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah.
And then this is when we go back to Teal'c rocking the high pony. Which is just spectacular. They're dropping this cannon through the ceiling down to assemble. And you guys, I know that all weapons generally kind of look like penises.
But this one especially.
This one especially looks like a penis.
Yes.
Here's the real question. Will we go ever an episode without saying the word penis?
Or dick.
Yes.
Any kind
in politics,
no.
Yes.
No,
challenge accepted.
I'm going to say Kinsey's a dick.
Oh, for sure that's good.
Listen, there was a cock ring the last time I was on this.
And we had a lengthy semen discussion in our last episode.
Oh, we did. So. You weren't here for that. It was great.
We did.
Guys, I think we have some repressed feelings we need to talk about.
Jack has to go convince Teal'c to save them, basically. And Jack is very fairly skeptical about the chances of this working.
As he should be.
Yeah. He has some good points of like, yeah, but the Teal'c, you like, they've already got us defeated. We're no use to him.
Yeah.
Like, when you met Teal'c, he was like, oh, you guys might be able to help me defeat Apophis, but we clearly cannot help him defeat Apophis.
This is missing so much of the necessary context that allowed Teal'c and Jack to become buddies. It's not, it was futile from the beginning.
Yeah. Daniel does have a self-aware moment here of saying, hey, I understand if you guys don't want to help me. This is your world, your people who are at stake here. And then Sam gets all in Jack's personal space.
I just have to say, wordless communication was on display in this scene. Lots of like glances back and forth and some like nods.
So there was a head nod in there.
There was a head nod. Sam kind of like nodded like in support of like Jack, like whatever he chose to do.
Well, and then Jack says that he was right about my son.
Yeah.
And Sam's face, though, when he says, when he mentions his son, it was pretty heartbreaking. And
where
sweet.
Is our Stargate spinoff of this alternate reality?
They're I all want dead.
It. AO3, I think.
It's a prequel.
AO3.
Yes, it's a prequel. It starts with Sam and Jack meeting at the SGA, and really, it's just a rom com
on AO3.
Relation. In fact, yes. But I want it in visual form.
That's what your brain is for.
No, it's tired. It wants to see it on video.
One day there will be technology where you can take things from your brain and make it into reality. I can't wait.
Oh, God help us all.
Yeah, I know.
Yikes. Never leaving my house.
So Daniel gives Jack the camera to take to Teal'c, and we get this beautiful moment.
I think this is where you all wish me good luck.
Jack.
Okay.
They're hugging. Whoa, wait, where's Catherine's part?
I put it separately. I broke them up.
Okay. So they're hugging there. So from the companion, the Stargate SG-1 companion, it says, on a more serious note, the actress, meaning Amanda Tapping, confides that the farewell scene between the alternate O'Neill and Carter was actually written as a kiss, but says, both of us looked at each other and said, let's just make it a hug. Working on the basis that less is more, Tapping suggests, I actually think the hug was much better than a kiss. To me, it conveyed a much deeper level of feeling. Of her co-star, she says, I am so glad we were both on the same page with it. It's not that I didn't want to kiss Richard Dean Anderson. I did want to. Just don't tell anybody.
Cheeky.
Thoughts and feelings on hug versus kiss.
I think both can work. And I think they would have made either work.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them. And I think the hug plays beautifully. But there's a part of me that's like, okay, if I'm saying goodbye to the man I love and I know it's the last time.
Yep.
I'm going to kiss him.
Yep. That's my only beef with it.
Yeah. It's not going to be like a big sexy tongue down your throat kiss.
No.
But I am going to, I'm going to kiss him.
I mean, she didn't kiss him specifically, but she kissed his cheek.
She and does then kiss his cheek
like
as this the
like
hair stroke.
Yeah.
I think that's an Amanda Tapping thing, because she'll do it again in Point of View, and she'll do it again in Grease. So I think it's not to be a creep, but I think it's an Amanda Tapping thing. I haven't studied like her kissing catalog or anything, but
sounds like you may have. But
I mean, inadvertently by watching it, but not like I'm not pausing it. Listen, we're not going down this road. I'm just saying.
Just watch the GIF 8,000 times.
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that the same? Never mind. We're just gonna. Okay.
That implicates us all.
I mean,
it does. I mean, as we've stated before, Jack hugs are the best.
Yep. That was a good one.
I do like that it's a hug because Jack hugs are the best, and he like gets her all the way around and puts his face in her neck.
Mm-hmm.
And they do fit so perfectly together.
And they are kind of, like, murmuring to each other. Like, there is an exchange happening back there, so, like, we're just not privy to it.
Well, but even before it cuts to Daniel and Catherine, there's a little moment where you can see it, and Jack, you can almost kind of hear it. He says, come here.
Yes, yeah,
which is his thing.
He also says, I love you.
He says, come here, and he says, I love you. I tried to pull him out and, like, make it so you hear the audio. My sound editing skills are not up to the task. I could not make it happen.
I know the computer's there, but hang on. Okay. Wait a minute.
I'll find the Tumblr post. There's a Tumblr post of the GIF, and it's slowed down, and you can see him say it. Like,
you don't hear it at all.
You don't hear it at all.
It's a lip
reading. Okay. You can see his lips say it.
You know what I'm doing after record this? I'm going directly to my computer, and I'm going to do that.
And if you GIF it, and then, like, put it on one of those, like, slow, loopy thingies or whatever. Whatever. But you can see it. And there's a Tumblr post out there somewhere floating around with it. And I honestly didn't notice it until I saw that post. And I was like, oh. Yeah. I understand. It's there. But yeah, that's the Khmer is amazing. Audible. But the
Khmer is very
It's very honest. Soft. But you can, hear it when you're watching it.
And the closed caption puts it on.
It does.
Oh, yeah. So then we get Daniel, his reaction to witnessing this.
I take it they're not engaged in your reality.
No.
No.
His face is great. I love the way that Michael Shanks delivers those type of moments where he's so baffled and confused. For scientific purposes, the hug lasts 13 seconds.
It's a long hug.
That's totally scientifically relevant, of course.
I mean, it was the length of the clip that I pulled, so. Yeah, and it ends with Sam's hand on his face and then wiping her tears.
Yeah.
Which is just heartbreaking because they both knew that it was a forever goodbye. End. Like, that was it.
Which, again, supports the kiss theory, but we can't change that now.
She does kiss his cheek.
I like the hug.
I do, too.
I think in a way hugs are more intimate. I think kisses can be kind of like demonstrative in a certain way, but hugs are like they feel more private to me.
Yeah.
So I support the hug decision,
especially a 13-second hug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is much longer than you think it is. Like, there's a show called QI, which is
I love QI.
Andrea likes QI. Yes, I fucking love QI. They have an episode where they talk about. Like, one of the questions is, like, what do you think the average length of a hug is? And someone throws out, like, 5 seconds or something, and they say, great, let's test it out. And they force two of the contestants to hug for 5 seconds, and it is so uncomfortable. Like, 5 seconds feels, like, it sounds short, but it feels long.
Oh, it sounds long to me.
Yeah, my hugs are, like, 1 second max.
Okay, back to the episode. Where were we?
Okay, so we go down to the gate room. And Hammond is rallying the troops. He's basically telling them, we've got to make this last stand. We got to hold them off. What an honor it's been serving with all of them and how proud he is of them. It's really sweet. And I love that even though in this world, Hammond is only a colonel, which kind of is crazy, like how he wouldn't have made general at his age. And I mean, he must have had some rough moments in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But to see that he still is a great military leader. And then we go to the hallway where the Jaffa are assembling the giant penis weapon. And Jack just waltzes in and surrenders to Teal'c and knows his name. And when he says Teal'c, the other Jaffa are like, what the hell? And
it's Mr. Teal'c to you.
Also, before this, they set the auto-destruct.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so Jack tells, or Hammond tells Sam and Catherine to set it for like 2 minutes after they're going to dial out.
Yeah. Sorry, that's important for later.
Yeah. So because he basically says if they're going to take this mountain and they want access to it, then we're going to make sure they don't get it.
Tough shit.
Yeah. So then Hammond pulls Harriman away from the control room to help with the fight. And he's still in his sweater vest.
He sure is.
Well, yeah, and that's when he tells him to set the auto-destruct, and we see Sam set it. And then we go to Jack showing Teal'c the video, and Teal'c is very confused. And Jack says that Teal'c hates being a slave, and then he, not super tactically, pulls the Ryak card, because he's like, you don't want your people to be a slave, and you don't want your son, Ryak, to be a slave. And Teal'c is like, yeah, I don't, and you freaking killed him, so.
Yeah, he kind of shot himself on the foot.
Yeah, because it seemed like Teal'c was sort of maybe listening a little bit.
It looked like he kind of got through him a little bit, and then the second he pulled the Ryak card, it was like,
Yeah, I don't want my son to be a slave or dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you nuked him. And then Jack just kind of like smiles.
He knew.
Yeah. And he gets shot by the giant penis cannon.
I'm not going to lie. I got a little teary eyed.
It's sad.
It made me so sad. I hate it. I hate fake deaths so much.
So these deaths count, right? And our death counts?
I was going to ask. I'm not sure.
Well, these are alternate versions.
Because it's not our Jack, Sam, and Teal'c dying.
So they,
they're definitely only dying once.
So they don't count?
I don't know.
I would say no.
Okay. I didn't add them yet. I was just asking what our consensus.
But this is also a very arbitrary count, and I say you do whatever you feel.
You know what? You know what? I can count it, and then if we want to like not count it in our like final numbers, then that's fine because I'll know what the episode is. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we cut to Catherine telling Sam to go to the gate room.
Yeah.
And then Sam starts to go, but then is like, oh, we may need the controller. So she runs upstairs to grab it. And then, because Catherine tells Daniel they'll need the remote. And then Sam's like, oh, I'll go get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's basically offering to stay behind. Like, it's a death win. Like, she's dying so that they can get out. And then we get this little exchange.
You help reunite me with Ernest in the other world. I guess the grand scheme of things, we're even.
It's pretty
sweet.
She
has such a cute voice.
She sounds like a little mouse woman.
Mouse woman.
That's great. Catherine's adorable.
Yeah, it's funny because it also reminds me of the fact that I brought up the last time she was in an episode that she's in Dante's Peak. And that she's the grandma. And she dies to save her kids and Pierce Brosnan. Her grandkids, her daughter, her grandkids, and Pierce Brosnan. And then here she is dying to save them. Although, in this case, it wasn't her screw up that made them be having to die in the first place. So it's more heroic here.
Yes, it's more heroic, of course.
Yes. I remember you having the beef with the grandma on the last
episode. I did.
And we firmly disagree, but that's okay. That's okay.
So then we go to the hallway where they're kind of having the final stand, and Hammond dies.
Yeah.
Some of the people fall back a little.
And we get a nice lingering shot of a very crispy Hammond.
Yeah. He's super sad.
He is crispy.
And then we cut to the briefing room where Sam is surrounded by Jaffa holding the remote. Oh. And she's like, wait, you can't kill me. I have information for Apophis. I know about this mirror that can send us to other dimensions. And they're like, oh, okay. And they take the thing from her. And she's like, oh, great. Thank you. And then she's like, oh, by the way, also, I have a grenade.
And I'm going to blow us all to hell.
And so badass. It was so badass.
And then it goes down to the control room and we see the explosion coming down the stairs. And then Sam's dead.
Oh, they just, like, once Jack falls, they just start. It's like, ah, ha, ha, death for all. Yes, here you go.
Okay,
you're going to die.
So this episode kind of reminds me of The Wish from Buffy, where it's an alternate reality. Cordelia goes back and, like, the Master's actually, like, taken over Sunnydale. And so, like, Giles is this, like, curmudgeon-y old man that works in the library. And Xander and Willow are vampires, and Buffy never came here, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, like, but, like, in the final battle, it's like, oh, Buffy dies. And then, oh, Xander and Willow died. And, you know, whatever. And then Giles has to save them from themselves. Anyway.
Yeah, I feel like this is, like, a pretty, like in alternate realities, it's like you can get the shock value of killing off main characters without any of the consequences.
Yep. Mm.
And all the main characters died except for Daniel.
Yeah. In a major role reversal.
Yeah.
I think it's standard in sci-fi stuff to use this type of some kind of alternate or fake reality to kill people. And we do it again with the bots later on.
The bots.
When we meet the Tin Man robots again.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Robo SG-1. Yeah.
Yeah, so then after Sam Kamikaze
Anyway, so Sam's dead.
We go back to the gate room. The wormhole disengages and Catherine starts dialing. Sam had mentioned earlier that she'd managed to cut off another 5 seconds off of the dialing sequence, so at least 5 seconds faster.
But again, you're dialing against someone who can...
Seven buttons.
I mean, apparently it still goes faster.
So then the Jaffa come into the control room. Luckily, Catherine, it seems like the sequence is automated once she's... I mean, usually Harriman is there still, like, clicking buttons, but it keeps dialing. And then Teal'c blasts his way into the gate room while Daniel is standing there by himself. He watches the Jaffa go into the control room. The blast doors come down. Presumably Catherine is dead.
Yeah.
Teal'c comes busting in. The gate finishes dialing. It activates. There's the kawoosh. And Daniel's just staring at Teal'c and he turns and runs up the ramp. Teal'c shoots him, hits him in the back of his shoulder, and he falls through the wormhole. And there was part of me that wondered, like, if there was a little bit of hesitation there on Teal'c's part, because he definitely could have just walked in and shot him. Like,
yeah, I think there was, because there was, like, that prolonged, like, eye contact that kind of implied that, like, there was some recognition there that was enough, I think, to cause Teal'c to maybe hesitate.
Yeah, I think there was also part of him who was like, it's just this one dude, you know? Yeah. But he does shoot him as he runs up the ramp. And then Daniel comes tumbling through the gate on P3R233 alternate.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes back to the little lab room, back through the mirror. It feels like the Going on a Bear Hunt book a little bit.
Yeah.
He goes back through the mirror and we go back to our world, P3R233. And SG-1 is like... They have just met back by the gate, and they're like, did you see him? No, did you see him? Crap, we can't find Daniel.
Yeah, they've been looking for him.
They've been looking for him for, presumably, we don't know if time has passed the same in both worlds, but presumably for a while, they've been looking for him. And then they hear him calling for help, and they run in, and he is exactly where they left him, which they must be pretty perplexed by. Like, what the hell, man? I swear I already looked in here.
Except he's also got a shiny new
staff weapon.
Shoulder bird. Yeah. Woo, tell him what he's won.
Yeah. Yeah, Teal'c is like, that is a staff weapon injury.
Thank you again, Teal'c.
And it looks pretty nasty. Like, it's real gross and blistery. And we'll get there. But it does not look as gross and blistery in politics.
Later. In the next scene. Or in the next episode.
It functionally is the next scene, yeah. And so then we get Daniel's very panicked declaration.
All right, let's get him back to Earth.
No time. We're all in very big trouble. They're coming. They're coming.
I mean, out of context, that sounds...
It's very, but it's also kind of very horror movie moment.
Did we mention that the auto-destruct went off at the
SGA? Oh, yeah, sorry. I didn't. It was, it basically as soon as, so Daniel goes through the gate, Teal'c watches him go through, and the gate, it disengages, and then the countdown finishes going down, and it blows up.
Kaboom.
So Teal'c also is dead.
Yep. R.I.P.
It's like that classic joke where, you know, someone will make a joke about a spoiler, and they'll just say, oh, it's the one where everybody dies. It's like, this is the episode where everybody dies.
Yeah.
Except for Daniel.
He is literally the only person who didn't die on that world.
Except for, technically, he died in Egypt.
Yeah.
That's true. He died. He'll die. Daniel was the first casualty in this episode.
And the 50% of the people from the Genesis list that they got through to the beta site.
Man, would love to see who was on that Genesis list and how that list got put together.
Oprah.
Oprah's on it. Beyonce's on it.
Well, and how they got those people to the SGC, the 50% of them, in those 4 days.
It's like, okay, so we have to tell you that there is a Stargate, but I guess, like, in the context of the Goa'uld motherships floating around, a little easier to swallow.
Yeah.
And we're going to send you through this wormhole.
And you are now humanity's last hope.
Yeah, so I hope you find someone here attractive, because you will be repopulating some planet.
Also, I hope they had an appropriate male to female ratio.
Yes.
For a Genesis site, you want more females. That's just biology. That's true.
Take notes out there, guys. Build your Genesis list. Wisely. Let's rate this episode.
Jess, you go first.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 7 for me. I forgot how much I really enjoyed watching it. I think the storytelling is pretty tight. The acting's good. I think it raises good questions, even if they don't get the answers that we necessarily want or explore. But I have no problem rewatching this episode. And I think, especially given the last few that we've watched and talked about, it's one of the tighter storytelling episodes. So I'm giving it high marks just based on, like, I feel like everything that got set up got tied up at the end. There wasn't anything that I felt was left hanging too badly or at all. And it feeds really nicely into the next couple episodes. So yeah, it's getting a 7 from me. Plus Jack and Sam. Like, I mean, come on.
I guess I'll go next. I also give it a 7, actually. I actually tend to always have a soft spot for alternate reality episodes. They tend to always be some of my favorite ones, just because they're different. You get to see characters in a different light, and you see actors do different things, which is also kind of cool. It's also kind of fun to watch the one character that happens to be in the alternate reality try to tell people that they're wrong, whereas he's the one who's in the wrong place. I agree with Jess, though. I felt like the storytelling in this episode was top-notch, that everything that got set up was equally closed, and yeah.
I give this one like a 6.5 out of 7, just because it's not like one of my all-time favorite episodes, but it is like a super duper, it's a good episode. Yeah. I mean, the only real knocks I have on it are, like, I do have some frustrations with seeming to lack the thought of we can gate to another planet and then gate people from that planet to other places. Yeah, we don't have this one. Like, that was a little frustrating to me, especially those kind of things stick out more when everything else is tightly written in the episode. Mm-hmm. In another episode, I maybe wouldn't have noticed it as much. But then also, I truly have problems with them just having, like, free and easy access to nukes to just be throwing around.
That's fair.
I have questions and concerns. But other than that, I really like it. I think it tells an interesting story. I also like alternate reality stuff because I think it kind of gets to, you get to look at, like, what's the core of a person? What are the things that we can change about ourselves and maybe the things we can't? And examining, like, what are those big moments in our lives that change who we are? Now, granted, we don't really get to see what those moments were, but I love also thinking about, like, what those moments were for the characters.
Adria, your turn.
Yeah, you rate.
My rating. I think I would probably give it a 6. Alternate reality episodes are cool. What I don't like about them, and I feel like this episode suffered from it, was this. I feel like there was too much dialogue devoted to establishing that this was an alternate universe. Like, there mm-hmm. were a lot of context clues at the very beginning that could have convinced one, really without much doubt, that they're in an alternate reality. And for some reason, Daniel was just, like, super slow getting it. And so there's a lot of talking about this being an alternate reality whenever I feel like there could have been more script time devoted to, like, developing the story in the alternate reality instead of just talking about the fact that it's an alternate reality. So that was something that irked me a little bit. And then the build up to the firefight, I already mentioned that I felt like there was a simple fix for that and they didn't fix it. So those would be, like, my only two complaints with it. Apart from those things, I think the acting was really solid. I think you guys are right saying that the writing was really tight, apart from the couple little things that Chelsea pointed out. But yeah, I think it was a pretty solid episode. It's also a good, it felt like a good standalone episode. Like, I was jumping into it, and apart from not knowing who Catherine was, I didn't really feel lost through this episode. Like, and part of that comes from it being an alternate reality, but I would say it stands really well on its own.
It's definitely a much better ep than I remember it. So, like, when we first got started and you were like, Chelsea, when you were like, this, the title was too long, I thought you were going to say the episode was too long, because I was actually going to say I thought the pacing was incredible considering how much story they packed into a 45-minute episode. Mm-hmm. And I never once, like, checked my phone. I don't have a watch. I never checked the time or, like, got on my phone to, like, my mind wandered hardcore on, like, Tin Man. But, like, I was engaged actively for the full episode, and I thought it told a good story. So this is one that I took note of, it being a lot of story without it feeling overwhelming.
Hmm. Yeah.
Air Metal Award.
Daniel.
I think it has to be Daniel because he brings back
Daniel.
He brings back the intel that saves our planet.
Well, yeah. I was thinking also, like, but then, like, without Sam shaving off the 5 seconds of the dialing, he wouldn't even be able to get home.
Right. And without Jack, like, distracting Teal'c, and without Catherine staying behind. Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, Daniel does bring back the coordinates to go to the ship to...
Daniel also was touching shit. If he hadn't been touching shit in the first place, he wouldn't have even been in this situation.
You know what? If Sam hadn't touched shit in Tin Man, they wouldn't have been falling down like weird people.
They all touch shit. It's not
except Daniel does it Jack because he's perfect.
You mean like when Jack sticks his head into the
fifth race? Yeah. Willingly do it.
Yes, he did.
Teal'c did it first.
No, but I didn't do anything to Teal'c.
I know, so he thought it was safe. That's different.
How could he possibly have known he had the ancient? He does it on his own in season 7.
That's self-sacrificing. It doesn't count at all. He knew the consequences, and he was doing it. He's perfect. I won't hear a word against him.
But if we give the medal to anybody else apart from Daniel in this episode, aren't we actually giving it to a new character?
Oh!
Yeah. James.
Daniel logic. Yeah, give it to James. Or Bethany.
Yeah, wait, Joshua. For a second, I was like, wait, who's James? I totally forgot, like, my own joke.
Your thing.
Okay, I'll give it to Daniel.
I'm going
to
say it's Daniel. Board,
right? Yeah, I would say Daniel.
All right.
Sorry, okay. Jess.
All right, if you love There Before the Grace of God and you want a fangirl with us, or a fan guy, we're not discriminatory, or you hate this episode and you can't believe that we all gave them 6s and 7s or 6.5s,
I'll bump it up to a 7 because it has a Jack hug, and that's always worth half a point.
Boom. That's 3 7s and a 6. We'll take it. If you're horrified that we gave 3 7s this episode, please let us know by emailing us at chevronslock7@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us at chevronslock7. You can find me, Jess, on Twitter at ProfTenant or on Tumblr at ProfessorTenant.
You can find me, Melanie, on Twitter at MelanieMartian, MarShan. Or you can find me on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy.
You can find me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils and on Tumblr at Pianosa2TheFighting8.
And you can find me, Andrea, as Munker4444 on both Tumblr and Twitter.
Good morning, campers.
Welcome to Chevron's Locked, a Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Melanie.
Okay, take two.
Like, I'm good at this, guys. I'm good.
Well, you just followed our normal cadence.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's not your fault. It's...
It is, though. We're just going to blame everything on me today.
Okay, take two.
All right.